Now it's time for Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party.
Kia ora, Tracy. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. First up today, I'd like to talk to you about Labor's immigration policy announced earlier this week, which proposes that New Zealand cuts immigration by between 20 to 30,000 a year. So even though Winston Peters tweeted his support for the policy on social media, are you worried that this plan by Labor to slash immigration numbers will encroach on traditionally New Zealand first territory?
Not particularly. I mean, I think what we've seen is that while New Zealand First has been talking for 25 years that we need to have a population plan which is connected to sensible immigration, and we've been trashed for it, let's not forget that both Labor, National and the Greens have called us racists and xenophobes for years. What we're finally now seeing is that they've seen that we were right. So, but now what they've got is they've got a problem with trust. So New Zealand First has always said it. We've never deviated from it. So do people really trust that Labor has now finally seen the light and has really got the courage, I suppose, to carry through with it?
And so you're saying that New Zealand First is totally behind Labor's proposal, or do you think there are areas in it for improvement?
I think what interested me most, I think, was actually Andrew Little's statements around international students. And I find them very concerning. I'm working on our international student policy now, talking to the sector, talking to universities and polytechs and wānanga and the student bodies. And what he announced the other day is an incredibly blunt tool that does put at risk an industry that is bringing in between $4 and $5 billion a year. And he's just basically said, we're just going to slash the numbers. So to me, some of the announcement that they've made seem to show a lack of understanding about the nuances of, let's say, export education and the areas where there are spaces for improvement without putting that industry at risk.
Yeah, I mean, I read about how there's the argument from the private training college industry that up to 70% of institutes could close if Labor's policy implemented. So are you saying that this side of the immigration policy needs to be more refined?
Well, first of all, the export education is not supposed to be an immigration policy. So that's one of the things that I'm talking to the sector about. I mean, one of the things that we could be looking at is actually going to something similar with the Australians, which is that students have to return to their home country to apply for permanent residency. We need to be looking at what are the work rights that are currently available to students. But if we were to do away with the 20 hours a week work rights that were only gained in 2014, we would not be competitive at all with most of the Western world. Mm-hmm. So you see, there's parts of this that can be improved upon, and it shouldn't be an immigration policy. But what Andrew Little announced the other day is just like a hammer, you know? Mm-hmm.
Right. So are you saying that when Labor said that low-level education courses provide foreign students with a backdoor immigration route, is that the thing that you're saying is too much of a blanket approach to it?
Well, and actually it's not the level of qualification that we're talking about. It's the fact that they have been able to have a one-year work right, 2 year, which is called a one-year hunt year, so they can work at anything they like while they look for a job and in the sector with which they trained, and then they get 2 years' worth of job opportunity to work in the sector in which they got their education. But all that was implemented without upping the labour force inspectorate, without actually making sure that NZQA was following up on those qualification levels, at the same time as lowering the English language requirements. So you see, it's a combination of things. To just say you're going to stop having those students does not address all the other issues that need to be addressed, but it does put that industry and the income we get from it at risk.
Mm. And so in terms of other issues, another big sort of thing that Labor was talking about, hopefully the intention with reducing immigration numbers, is that it eases infrastructure and that it lets us catch up on infrastructure. Is this something that New Zealand First agrees with?
Well, we've been saying it for years. So obviously we agree with it. I mean, Labor is merely articulating, the Greens are articulating it. All they're doing is articulating New Zealand First policy. What we do have to come back down to, though, and this would be New Zealand First point, Labor started this. Labor started this mass immigration, and then it was picked up and run with by the National Party. why would you assume that the people who started it should be the people who that you trust to put an end to it?
Is this not scapegoating immigrants for these problems, though? I mean, you know, issues with the housing crisis and with transport. It goes much further than just immigrants. I mean, we already have an existing deficit in Auckland's infrastructure without increasing immigration levels, you know? Is this scapegoating immigrants?
Well, I think if people start talking about immigrants, then you're right. It starts to personalise it down to the human. This is about immigration policy. And for years, New Zealand First has talked about, and I want to say it again, we've talked about a population plan discussion. So how many people in New Zealand is the right number of people in New Zealand to keep a standard of living that we all believe is appropriate? Now, that's a conversation we need to have. And then your migration policy actually fits into that population plan policy because you incrementally take yourself up to the level of the population that your country wants to accept. So yes, to just say immigrants does actually start to personalise it. This is about a government policy.
So would this apply to returning or remaining Kiwis? Oh, sorry, would this apply to returning Kiwis as well then?
It can't. It can't apply to them. I mean, there's 23,000 of the 72,000 net that actually people are talking about in the last financial year or whatever. Then 23,000 of them were New Zealanders returning and Australians who have the right to come here. So you've got 23,000 people of that 72,000 that you can't do anything about. So you have to actually be working around with those other numbers. Those are the things that New Zealand First is looking at.
So also what I wanted to talk to you about as well is that, so with the there is kind of this narrative as well that migrants, we need to prioritise Kiwis first over migrants for jobs, that migrants are taking Kiwis jobs. Is that also something that, I don't know, I feel like this is also another narrative that possibly scapegoats immigrants for some of the woes that we're experiencing in New Zealand, but it doesn't quite nail the issue on its head.
Well, I think, again, the fact that we don't have workforce planning in this country, remember the national government removed it 3 years ago, so there is no responsibility for workforce planning anywhere in this country right now in any government department. The fact that we don't have workforce planning, the fact that we do have employers who are bringing in migrant workers so that they can keep the level of pay lower than they might have to. I mean, this is a supply and demand. If we accept supply and demand around health prices and so on and so forth, why are we not accepting supply and demand arguments around human beings? So again, we want to be sure that the conversation is not on the person who has come to New Zealand for a better life, but we want to make the conversation about the rules that are being applied across the whole of workforce planning and the ability of employers to bring in workers for real shortages, not just to keep wages lower.
But, I mean, regardless of that, though, immigrants in Auckland, for example, are essential to the economic growth of the city, and they contribute much more to taxation and economic benefits, according to a population expert. So I feel like if you drastically reduce immigration numbers, even though you're taking the approach of a more sort of general population management tactic, it still might slow down the economy in terrible ways. So is it not just achieving a balance?
Well, everything is about balance, and you're quite right. And stuff is out of balance now. This is why it's become a major issue. But can I ask you this question? At the end of this year, 100,000 year 12s and year 11, year 12s and year 13 students could actually be out on the job market. Now, is that the person that says that bringing in these people from overseas to fill skill shortages and they add taxes and they do this, that and the other thing, are we balancing what they bring and the taxes they pay with the taxes that actually have to go out paid to support Kiwis that can't get jobs or can't get employment? Are we actually putting those two equations together? Because that's the question. You might be making money over here, but what are we spending over here? And the reality is, nobody's doing the workforce planning. Nobody's doing the mapping to say, okay, we've got 100,000 young New Zealanders coming out of the school system in December. Where are they going to go? Where do we need them to go? And how does that affect the skill shortages that we've got going on in several of these industries? So then we know how we have to use migration.
I mean, I guess it's interesting, though, because in the days since Labor's policy has been announced, there have been employers that have come out and say, hey, look, if these plans go ahead, we'll be losing our workforce. You know, people in our, you know, working in our restaurant's kitchen, for example, they wouldn't be allowed to work here under these new changes. So I don't know if those if we do put these changes into place, will there be the Kiwi numbers to step up and go into these jobs? And it seems like from anecdotal evidence that that's not the case.
And I think we heard the same thing actually when Michael Woodhouse came out and the national government came out and said, we're going to decide that if you don't get paid over $49,000 a year, you're not a skilled worker. Right, so we heard exactly the same things around about 3 weeks ago. And to be frank, those employers, they're right. They're right. These statements are being made without proper workforce planning, without actually the big picture. So they're both really blunt instruments. Now, what New Zealand First is saying is we want to see New Zealanders at the front of the line for employment and for education and for all other things because they're existing New Zealanders. But we also want to see workforce planning so that we can get a big vision of what should our migration levels be. We want to tighten up on whether employers can just decide that they've advertised, but because a New Zealander won't take the job for that price, they now have to gain from overseas.
So perhaps
such a big picture, you know.
So even maybe a workplace sponsoring migrants to come over as a possible?
Well, I think, again, that my real hope is that if New Zealand First gets the opportunity to have some influence after the 2017 election, that our workforce planning that's part of our tertiary policy will be able to be implemented almost immediately. That should give us a 20-year projection of what we need inside our workforce. Mm. Then we can have a true migration conversation because we'll be able to match what our current Kiwis are doing, the skills levels we haven't got, and the migration that we need. Because we're always going to need some migration. New Zealand First has always said that.
And so on to David Seymour's euthanasia bill. So party leaders are saying it's going to be a conscience vote for MPs. And so New Zealand First haven't been clear so far on their standing, waiting to discuss as a caucus. So what are the sort of issues that you need to suss out as a caucus before you decide where you're going to vote on this?
Well, first of all, it is a conscience issue. And on a conscience issue, nobody in New Zealand First caucus has to vote on a party line at all. We haven't had an opportunity to obviously discuss the bill itself and the rules and the levers that David's got inside his bill. But my personal feeling is, when I get to that caucus, is that this is just too big an issue for 121 politicians to decide for this country. I honestly do believe in binding referendum. And this is one of those issues that I think the country needs to have a conversation about, not just 121 politicians.
So what I understand, though, is New Zealand First policy is to have a national discussion over at least 2 years, then followed by a binding referendum. So why such a long time?
Well, it's a big issue, and maybe 2 years is too long. I mean, you know, I'm open to discussion about what is the appropriate amount of time, considering in the light of the fact that Marianne Street's petition is currently being considered by the Health Select Committee and has had thousands of submissions. So maybe we don't need a 2-year period, and I'll have that conversation with my caucus. But I do think that everybody needs to be fully informed. We can't have extremes on both sides of this conversation kidnap the conversation, similar to what we saw with the anti-smacking bill. We want the general public to be as fully informed as possible, and sometimes that takes time, but it may not take 2 years.
And so in terms of your own personal stance on the issue, where do you sit?
Well, I was just having that conversation with my husband last night, actually. And you know what? I don't know. I truly, truly, truly don't know. I've had family members that I have nursed to their death. It's really around the rules around which that might take place. And then I have to be confident that it doesn't open a door for downstream, the changing of those rules so that it becomes a much wider opportunity. So honestly, right now, I do not know. I do not know.
Right. So trying to achieve that balance between giving people the right to decide and it becoming a slippery slope to questionable
things.
Yeah,
that's the one. That's the one. I mean, you know, it's such a big conversation, and I really want to hear, I need to hear from a lot more people. before I can make up my mind.
Cool. Well, thank you for speaking with us this week, Tracy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
That was Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party. The Wire.